Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us, whether you're listening on the radio, online, or on demand. I am really grateful you are here. Think about this. Unless you're living off the grid or off the land, you're a member of the global economic supply chain. Whether you're shopping online and you proceed to checkout and click buy, think about all the moving parts that have to work before your doorbell rings and you're tearing into a corrugated cardboard box. Let's trace it back. The delivery came on a truck, which picked it up at a warehouse. The warehouse is stocked with thousands of other products on their way to consumers like you by way of cargo freighter. Before that, the cargo traveled by sea from a factory in Mexico or China. The factory relies on more ships and trucks carrying raw materials in order to make the thing that you ordered in the first place. It is a long and arduous journey to get to your door. Never more so than today. The pandemic has wreaked havoc on the global supply chain. Remember that mad rush on toilet paper and PPE shortage from the early days of COVID? It's like that, only now worse. The financial firm Moody's released a report on Monday that calls our current supply chain situation a perfect storm and places the blame on, quote, border controls and mobility restrictions, unavailability of a global vaccine pass, and pent-up demand from being stuck at home. Here's a paragraph from a recent New York Times article that boils down what we mean when we talk about supply chain disruptions. It reads, quote, a shipping container that cannot be unloaded in Los Angeles because too many dock workers are in quarantine is a container that cannot be loaded with soybeans in Iowa, leaving buyers in Indonesia waiting and potentially triggering a shortage of animal feed in Southeast Asia. One of the co-authors of that New York Times article joins me now to talk about the interconnectedness links in the supply chain and what it means for consumers here and around the world. Peter Goodman is the New York Times global economics correspondent and author of the forthcoming book, Davos Man, How the Billionaires Devoured the World. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. Have you put off ordering a Halloween costume and found that nothing like it will get to you until November? Or maybe you're a small business owner with some insight on what this has all meant for your inventory or your consumers? 646-435-7280 is our number. 646-435-7280. Or maybe you have a story of something you ordered, which you're, you know, still waiting for. 646-435-7280. Or you can hit us up on our social media, same handle for Instagram and Twitter, at All of It WNYC. So, Peter, we've been talking about all the supply chain weirdness. Everybody remembers in the beginning of the pandemic, there was a rush on certain items. How is this different?
Well, it's more intense than it was before, because what we've learned is, you know, in the beginning, everybody rushed to buy toilet paper, cleared out the shelves. We didn't have enough personal protective gear like face masks, surgical gowns. These were like discrete items. Mm-hmm. What we've learned is that the supply chain is so interconnected that a shortage of just one chemical element can stop the production of a whole variety of products. Like, for instance, you know, I recently talked to a company that supplies chemicals to paint manufacturers around Philadelphia. Paint manufacturers may use dozens of chemicals to produce paint. Well, if just one of them can't get in via container ship from China, it's as if they've got nothing. They just can't make what they're making. And as a result, you know, contractors in the area can't get hold of paint. That combines with the lumber shortage. It makes it really difficult to do building projects. And so construction workers, despite the fact that there's tremendous demand for their services, end up going without work.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Have you noticed the supply chain issue in your life? 646-435-7280. You can tweet or DM us on Instagram or Twitter at All of It WNYC. Or maybe you're a small business owner with some insight on what all this has meant for your inventory or your customers. 646-435-7280. Everybody's got a personal story. Do you have one, Peter?
Do I have a personal story? Yeah, actually, I just moved back to New York after 5 years in London, and we had a third kid. We need to buy a car, and it was really impossible because the computer chip shortage which is, you know, exacerbated by other supply chain problems, but is really just, you know, right out of the pandemic. I mean, as the pandemic shut down economies, a lot of auto manufacturers assumed that there'd be a drop in demand, so they canceled orders for chips. Well, it turns out they overdid it. They need the chips. They can't make their cars without chips. They've slashed production of cars. The result is a profound shortage of cars. And so as I was trying to buy a car for my family, every dealer I ran into said, well, you know, you've got to go on a waiting list for months in advance. By the way, you have to pay more than list price. I mean, it was really difficult to find somebody willing to sell us a car.
Yeah, I had ordered pre-vaccines back in February. I'd ordered some outdoor furniture, figuring we'd spend a lot of time outside with my son and his friends. It would probably be safer. I ordered it in February, and it arrived the last week of August.
Right.
It was that long. So part of this breakdown that you talk about is it's in two different sort of silos, manufacturing and one is shipping. So let's start with shipping. A few days ago in a piece you wrote, you published about the Port of Savannah and the cargo containers that have been piling up there. The administrator of the port told you, quote, they're not coming to get their freight. We've never had the yard as full as this. Why is that happening?
Right. Yeah. Well, so that's happening because we in the global economy have been ruled by so-called lean manufacturing for decades, where companies, publicly traded companies, have preferred to spend their dollars buying back their shares or paying out dividends to shareholders rather than spending money to stock warehouses with extra parts and extra products as a hedge against trouble. So now we've got this tremendous bit of trouble, and we just don't have enough warehouse capacity. Moreover, warehouses are crammed full of stuff. The retailers have ordered extra and early for the Christmas season, worried that they'll be without the products that that shoppers will want. So warehouses are stuffed to the rafters. Meanwhile, we don't have enough truck drivers because we've effectively degraded truck driving as a profession over decades. Wages are down. Working conditions are poor. As the port director in Savannah put it to me, he said, you know, show me a parent who would encourage their child to go become a truck driver today. So you've got these retailers who've got cargo coming into the Port of Savannah, and they have no place to put it. So they're just leaving it on the docks of the port. So as a result, the port is serving as a de facto storage center for retailers who have ordered all this stuff they can't handle.
Let's go to Michael, who is calling in from Sparta, New Jersey. Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for calling All of It. You're on the air.
So thank you. I love your show.
Thanks.
I am a small business owner in Sparta, New Jersey, and we own an IT and telecommunications company. So we build IT networks and voice over IP phone systems for our clients. And as of late, we cannot get the networking parts that we need in order to do jobs. So we're putting jobs out 3, 4, 5 months to make customers wait, and jobs that would usually take 3 or 4 weeks. And along with that, my largest customer today just had me put in an order for 17 printers because we could get them now, and he's not sure that we're going to be able to get them, you know, going off a year or two from now. So we just see no end in sight in the supply chain issue.
Michael, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your experiences, and we are wishing the best for you. My guest is Peter Goodman. He is the global economics correspondent for the New York Times. We are talking about the supply chain issues. I want to circle back to the truck drivers for just a minute.
Sure.
One piece I was reading, it suggested that there's also just not enough trained truck drivers because the training that truck drivers would have gotten during the pandemic didn't happen. Those courses weren't available, that there is a very specific pandemic related issue to why there aren't truck drivers. Are there more parts of the food chain, the supply chain, that is very, very specific to the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots. So, you know, the whole medical supply chain, I mean, we act as if it's sort of an accident that we ran out of protective gear in the middle of the pandemic. I mean, plenty of experts have warned for years that we're quite vulnerable. I mean, we've taken advantage of reliable shipping links. A lot of companies have just acted as if The seas are, they might as well just be land, that there are no longer any risks to shipping because the advent of containers, these standardized steel boxes that stuff goes into, you can just take for granted that you can move goods made in a factory in China to North America and get hold of it when you need it. And for years, these warnings effectively went unheeded because you could just make a lot of money by finding a low wage country to make your goods. And so these shortages, especially in PPE, were, you know, entirely predictable.
So, and I think you might have answered a little bit in that answer, but I want to tease it out. Are there problems in the supply chain that have always been there that people weren't paying attention to? And the pandemic, as with so many other issues, really just exacerbated those already existing problems that perhaps should have been addressed earlier?
Well, people who pay attention to monopoly power will tell you that, you know, for 25 years or so, the federal government has acted as if antitrust is just a marginal consideration. Mm-hmm. As long as the consumer is getting lower prices right now, we need not worry about the size of the companies that are and the concentration of power, the companies that are selling us our goods. Well, you know, in the pandemic, suddenly, you know, we have a situation where pork processors have to shut down because there are significant outbreaks of COVID. And even as their workers are deemed essential and forced to go to work or lose their paychecks, there's a hit to the supply and prices go up. And this seems like, you know, it's entirely pandemic related. But of course, you know, this lands atop years of concentration amongst pork producers where, you know, just a couple of conglomerates dominate most of our supply and have benefited from pricing power. And then when there's a shock like the pandemic, we have shortages and inflation for ordinary people.
The pandemic, consumers are part of this equation. People have changed their way they buy, how much they buy. You wrote, consumers in the United States and other wealthy countries have taken pandemic lockdowns as the impetus to add gaming consoles and exercise bikes to their homes, swamping the shipping industry with cargo and exhausting the supplies of many components. How have the different players in the supply chain, those manufacturers and shippers and retailers, had to change the way they operate because consumers change the way we consume?
Well, there's a growing sense that what had seemed initially like a short-term problem, you know, if you go back to last fall, where it becomes clearer that it was a mistake for companies to assume that the economic downturn associated with the pandemic would result in just a reduction in business, which caused a lot of retailers to slash orders for all sorts of things. That was a mistake. And suddenly, you know, as you note, Americans may not be spending money at movie theaters and in restaurants, and they may not be going to shopping malls, but they're filling out their bedrooms with home office equipment. They're putting, you know, exercise equipment in their basements. That results in this tremendous surge of orders for factories in China that make most of this stuff, and that exceeds the supply of containers. But initially there was a sense that, you know, once that we got back to some semblance of normalcy, we'd be back to normal, as it were. But mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, I mean, take like older people who previously haven't used e-commerce to bring groceries to their door, have now gotten a taste of that convenience, and they may not go back. And that means continued pressures on the supply chain because, you know, individuals ordering their stuff, that's more deliveries, that's a more complex sorting of inventory that's required. So there's a feeling that we're going to have to build out capacity at ports. We're going to need more warehouses and more sophisticated warehouses. We're going to need more truck drivers. We're going to need more rail connections. And that's going to take some years to figure out.
Linda via Twitter wrote, my hashtag supply chain issue is the same as your guest. Need a new car, and I live in New Orleans, so it's even more limited on a smaller scale. OMG, the prices in the grocery stores. That's another part of this equation, how much things cost, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a real debate as to whether this is transitory. That's the word the central bankers keep throwing around. Is this something that will fix itself as companies take their cue from the market and start making more of the stuff that's in short supply? But what we've learned is that even if you have most of the ingredients to make the goods that you want, all it takes is one shortage and you're effectively stymied. There are cars that are entirely built except for the chips that are just stranded all around the world as a result of these shortages. And the ripple effects are just very difficult to predict. And that's why it may be that these shortages are going to be with us for some time, and that's making prices go up for a whole range of goods. But, you know, traditionally, when central bankers worry about inflation, they lift interest rates and they sort of snuff out commercial activity, and that causes prices to fall. In this case, that doing that could actually make things worse because this is not a so-called demand shock. This isn't that there's too many people out there with cheap money chasing after the same quantity of goods, driving up the prices. This is a supply shock. This is, you know, the companies that make our stuff are unable to get their stuff to us because of these shipping problems that we're talking about. They're unable to buy the raw materials and components they need to make the things that they want to make for us. So if we make it harder for them to do what they do by jacking up borrowing costs, we may actually exacerbate the very shortages that we're looking at.
One piece of analysis I read, and I'm not sure this is necessarily your wheelhouse, so feel free to pass.
Sure.
The idea was that this is a little bit of a wake-up call to America to start making things again rather than relying on others.
Yeah, I mean, that's a reflexive move. There are some areas in which that makes sense, like PPE. Mm-hmm. We should not be reliant on a single country, and especially a single country we've decided to have a trade war with. To make the stuff that frontline medical workers need to treat COVID patients. That seems perfectly reasonable. But, you know, there's a reason why so much of our productive capacity has gone around the world. In part, it's companies catering to shareholder interests and trying to cut prices so they can increase profits. In part, it's about satisfying the consumer demand for lower cost goods. But it's also that, you know, Americans have gotten used to less industrial pollution in our midst. And is that something we're going to welcome back to start making all the stuff that we don't make anymore? A lot of things like computer chips, you know, it's not like just launching, you know, some bake shop in your basement. It requires, you know, billions of dollars, advanced technology. It takes years to get going. So it's easy to say, let's make more stuff in the United States, but there are a lot of reasons why we make stuff around the world. And the global supply chain is very much a reality.
What does this mean for Christmas and Hanukkah?
What it means is Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and the rest of the holiday shopping season, you know, get used to it being difficult to get hold of some of the things you might want. Shortages are exacerbating themselves in that a lot of retailers are ordering early and they're ordering extra, and that's swamping warehouses and making it harder to move things around. I mean, in short, there will be some shortages.
My guest is Peter Goodman, New York Times Global Economics Correspondent, author of the forthcoming book, Davos Man, How the Billionaires Devoured the World. I hope to come back on the show and we can talk about your book.
Love to. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Peter. This is All of It.